Good Friday. It is September 18th, 2020, and this is Ozarks at Large on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this hour, a pandemic and tourism. Major issues as voters in Eureka Springs go to the polls this fall to elect members of the City Council. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has that report. And in just a few minutes, the slow, small uptick in passengers using the Fort Smith Airport as a six-month economic slowdown continues to have an effect on air travel. There are now more than 1,100 confirmed and probable deaths in Arkansas from COVID-19. The Arkansas Department of Health's Thursday report includes 1,018 confirmed deaths from the virus and another 148 probable deaths. That Thursday report indicates the highest number of new cases coming from four of the most populated counties in the state: Pulaski, Sebastian, Washington, and Benton. Thursday's report of 883 confirmed cases, the most in a 24-hour testing period since a week ago today, when more than 1,100 new confirmed cases were added to the state's total. Arkansas PBS will host four candidate debates next month. The debates will feature candidates running for three Arkansas congressional districts and a U.S. Senate seat. Sessions with those seeking election to Arkansas's 2nd, 3rd, and 4th congressional seats will take place on Monday, October 12th and Tuesday, October 13th. A debate for the U.S. Senate seat is scheduled for Wednesday, October 14th, though at the time of the official announcement of the event, Senator Tom Cotton, the incumbent, was not scheduled to participate, and only his Libertarian opponent, Ricky Dale Harrington Jr., had agreed to appear. Each debate will be available as a live stream and aired later on Arkansas PBS. This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his home office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Welcome back, Michael.
Well, again, thanks for having me back.
Let's talk first about a loss for the city of Fort Smith. It's we're talking about the death of Larry Clark, who was influential in the business world, as well as kind of the recreational profile of Fort Smith. Tell me more about him.
Right. Well, he was quite a character. But yes, he died Sunday. He was 77. And he was he's born in Eureka Springs, so he's got a Northwest Arkansas connection too. But he moved to Fort Smith in the late 60s, and he was assistant manager of the Fort Smith Chamber of Commerce at the time. He was responsible in helping folks recruit some of these industries that, of course, some of them have gone, but some of them are still here. And then in 1972, he left the chamber to work with his friend, who had become his best friend's business partner, Sam Iller. And they created Brown, Iller, and Clark and Associates. It's now BHC Insurance. But it's one of the larger insurance private, or I should say independent insurance companies, in Western Arkansas, if not in Arkansas. So he ran that successful business for a long time. That company was eventually bought by First Bank Corp. It's on First National Bank of Fort Smith. And it was interesting. I was talking to Sam Seacard, who's president in that bank, and he said that prior to, you know, working with him in the business world, he didn't know him, but the first couple of meetings they had, he said it became clear that Larry Clark was the smartest guy in the room when it came to insurance, that he wasn't just a, you know, hell fella, well met. He knew his business. One of the things, though, that he really contributed to the region, and I don't think people realize this, but the Arkansas Rodeo Fair Board, he was on that in a leadership role for 30 years. He was responsible for bringing in some of the big acts. Look, before the world knew about Garth Brooks, before Reba McEntire and some of those other big names, he was booking them. He hooked up with a company out of Nashville, a booking agency out of Nashville. Alabama, Toby Keith, or some other big names, but they would find these up-and-comers, and they'd book them for like a 2 or 3 year contract. And Larry had a knack for finding them. You know, they'd come to Fort Smith and perform for, you know, pennies, and then the next year they'd make it big, but they still had to come back to Fort Smith for 2 or 3, you know, they were big names.
But he had them locked in.
And so he had them locked in, and, you know, they may be getting $100,000, and I'm using rough numbers here, somewhere else, but he still got them at that, you know, $25,000 rate. Anyway, great community leader, created not only a lot of jobs through his insurance company, but brought a lot of entertainment, I guess what we now call quality of place to the Fort Smith region.
One of the phrases we've seen kind of written and we've heard spoken over the last, I don't know, few weeks is returning slowly, as in business is returning slowly. And it popped up in an article at TalkBusiness.net this week regarding the Fort Smith Regional Airport returning, but slowly.
Yeah, that's unfortunately. And when they say slowly, I think, you know, like snail's pace, slowly. Kind of a thing, not like me running the 40-yard dash slow, much more slower than that. But, the Fort Smith Regional Airport put out their August numbers. Their numbers are down 67% compared to last year. During the first 8 months of the year, enplanements, which is travel out of the airport, is down 58%. The percentage is improving. I mean, it was 90%. You know, when this thing first hit. So as Michael Griffin, the airport director, said, some things are improving. American Airlines, which is now, Delta has suspended flights out of the airport. American Airlines is now the only airline serving the airport. But in the good sign, they've returned their larger regional jet, and they're back to doing the three flights a day that also correspond with kind of business travel. One flight leaves early in the morning. You have another, you know, flight in the afternoon, and another flight comes back in the late evening. So if you've got business in Dallas or anywhere else, because that's where it hooks up in the DFW, there's a benefit there. But they're still as are XNA and the Clinton National Airport in Little Rock. They are all things very similar. The client, one thing that the saving grace for the Fort Smith Regional Airport, as is a lot of other airports, is that airport received almost $12 million in funding through the CARES Act. Right. So most of that can be used for operational expenses. So that's gonna save their bacon for a while. But what's unfortunate is the airport was really back on a positive trend. They had 5 years. This was going to be the five years of growth. This was going to be the sixth year of growth. So it's obviously not going to be that way. And I don't know, you may have already covered this, but a week or so ago, consultants at XNA, the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport, said it could be 2 or 3 years before traffic comes back to the normal that was seen in 2019.
When Delta suspended their flights out of the Fort Smith Airport back in the spring, I think they said maybe after the end of September they might come back. Any word on A, whether they've made that decision, or B, when we might know if they've made that decision?
Yeah, that's a good question. I talked to Griffin about that, and he's not sure. They've received no correspondence from Delta saying, okay, we're going to gear up again on such and such date. So I kind of pressed him. He was hesitant, and I don't blame him for being hesitant to say when they will come back. But yeah, they, at the end of September was when they were said, you know, we're going to suspend until then, and then we'll review. So
okay.
It's returning slowly is one phrase we use. The other phrase we often use is uncertain.
Yeah, right. Finally, social media can make a difference. There was a situation over the past, 8 or 9 days with Oak Cemetery, a historic cemetery owned by the city in Fort Smith. Grass had grown. Some people noticed this, put it on Facebook, and the grass got cut. Did I succinctly put that together?
Yeah, that was it. And Oak Cemetery is not just any cemetery. We had a few folks kind of give us a little bit of a hard time for writing a story about, oh, you guys know the cemetery journalism business. Well, that's Oak Cemetery is unique. I mean, you've got a lot of the marshals. A lot of the folks in Fort Smith history are buried out there. There are it's a 30-acre cemetery, more than 100 marshals and deputies and court-appointed officials are out there. Over 20 of the folks that are hanged by Judge Parker are out there. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. But yeah, and when we say grass grew up a little bit, I don't mean just, you know, a couple inches maybe over, you know, over the base of a monument. It you could have, if the monuments weren't there, you could have baled that for hay. That cemetery, it was looking pretty bad. And so, of course, we've got fall coming on. Maybe this shouldn't be that much of a problem, but it was very interesting, almost heartening to some extent, Kyle, to see how social media got on it. And then it just quickly was, now it's very pristine looking cemetery. It looks very nice. So kudos to those citizens who raised hell about it.
Well, there you go. All right. Michael Tilley occasionally raises hell about things. You can follow that at talkbusiness.net. He is with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, we'll talk next Friday when it's autumn.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I look forward to that.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Arkansas PBS offers essential support for families, educators, and communities during Suicide Prevention Month with the 17-part digital series Suicide Prevention, Looking Deeper. Counselor Shauna Burns discusses warning signs, risk factors, and prevention. This series and resources available at myarkansaspbs.org/suicideprevention.
This is Ozarks at Large. The COVID-19 pandemic was declared just as the city of Eureka Springs was preparing for a new tourist season, the town's bread and butter. Despite a mask mandate issued in July, a citywide temporary ban on all public events in Eureka ordered by the city's mayor through the end of the year, myriad restaurant and bar restrictions, tourists are flocking to town. But just how to continue to operate the city during what's expected to be a prolonged pandemic? That's a top campaign issue for 6 determined Eurekans running for city council. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Eureka Springs City Council incumbent Melissa Green, Ward 2, Position 1, is choosing to run again for City Council, she says, in order to keep citizens and guests safe while keeping the town's economy strong.
We've had an influx of young people, hoping to get them involved in our commissions and eventually in our City Council and City Government. I want to work on ecotourism.
Green operates a lodging business that relies on tourism for her livelihood.
I want to work on, you know, bridging the gaps between some of our factions here.
Factions, meaning those in Eureka, population 2000, who support strict pandemic mandates and those who prefer to ease back to generate more business dollars.
The mayor put a moratorium on events, and I 100% am behind him. Events that bring people crowded conditions shoulder to shoulder.
When a global pandemic was declared in March, Eureka's revenue began to steeply decline, according to financial records. City departments are asked by the mayor to make cuts, Green says, without impacting residential services. By early summer, as more tourists decided to travel to Eureka seeking a break from home isolation, sales tax collections began to creep back up. In reaction, city officials urged businesses to comply with strict mask and physical distancing rules. Green worries overcrowding Eureka Springs with tourists this fall could cause a viral hotspot, threatening the town's reputation.
Why not err on being safe and going slow?
Mike Seals, currently board president of the local Chamber of Commerce and interim director, aims to unseat Melissa Green. The former J.B. Hunt logistics manager has launched multiple startups and presently operates CBI Team, a private business sales consultant firm. He ran for mayor in Eureka but lost in 2018 to Butch Berry.
Serving on the city council would benefit my role and participation in the Chamber of Commerce.
Seals, who lives in the downtown district, says Eureka is adapting to what he calls the new normal.
Most businesses have done very well, and overall, we had one of the better tourism summers that we've had in a long time. In fact, people are reporting numbers above 2019.
Seals, who serves on the mayor's reopening task force, says Mayor Berry has mostly made right decisions.
The shutting down of permits for parades and for events in town, you know, I think that's what he had to do. But at the same time, again, we've had a lot of people come anyway because they love to be here anyway. And then we've had a lot of first timers.
As a tourist for 30 years and a resident for 7 years, Seal says, he plans to represent both sides of the equation.
I'm Laura Jo Smoley. I'm running for Ward 1, Seat 2.
Longtime resident Laura Jo Smoley worked at City Hall for 3 years as development coordinator and transit director, owned businesses downtown, served on the Chamber of Commerce Board, and is current chair of the Eureka Springs Planning Commission. She's a disabled U.S. Army veteran. If elected, Smoley will focus on the city's master plan, especially green spaces and residential districts.
We still have roads that are unpaved. We need to provide for young families for sidewalks, bike lanes, things like that. And by building our landscape as a city, it's going to be more inviting for people, especially young families, to move into town permanently.
Smoley says new and existing residents seeking to improve their properties, which is trending right now, need to be more efficiently accommodated by the city, showing her campaign card.
It says, residents and communities build better cities.
Smoley's opponent, Susan Harmon's, completing her first term on city council, a position she hopes to maintain. She operates a bed and breakfast in Eureka, which she says is doing well despite public events shut down by the mayor.
You know, more than likely, probably 99% of us are not likely to get deathly ill from the virus. So at this point, if I was empty, maybe I would say, you know, we have to have the events in order for me to be able to still make a living. But at this point, it's been fantastic.
Harmon says if reelected, she plans to focus on generating more business for her constituents next season while seeking more council involvement in what she describes as top-down pandemic policymaking.
You know, a lot of times we aren't in control of the things that are brought up to city council. They are based on decisions that are made in the mayor's office. So financial responsibility, making sure this town is running the way it should be, would be one of my top things. And then just being fair to the residents and understanding what their needs are.
Bill Ott challenging incumbent Bob Thomas for Ward 2, Position 2. He served one term on city council in the early 2000s.
What I do for a living at this moment is I am the director of marketing communications for the 1886 Crescent Hotel and Spa, and the 1905 Basin Park Hotel. But on October 10th, I turned 70. On November 1st, I become retired. So I will have plenty of time to devote as a member of the city council.
He says temporary bans on public events in Eureka are reasonable within limits.
Taking it up to the end of the year might be a good idea. Beyond that, I think we all need to make sure that we don't go too far in the future because we may get ahead of our skis. I just want to make sure that we make decisions with current information, with current conditions, and then make those decisions accordingly.
Bob Thomas is running against Bill Ott. He's a retired educator and administrator. He's served on city council for 6 years. Thomas is campaigning on budget transparency and accommodating new residents relocating to Eureka Springs, part of the nation's new remote workforce.
Realtors tell me that homes in the area, especially higher-end homes, are really selling, and that is because of the work from home movement that's taking place nationwide. So, you know, we want to maintain the attractiveness of our community for those people, and those people are looking for quality of life.
And when it comes to undeclared political factions in town, which no one agreed to address directly?
You know, there was a farmer, and he had a goose, and it laid a golden egg. And so, you know, every day he got the egg, and he had money to live on and money to, you know, run his farm and stuff. But his wife wasn't happy. This sexist, but it's an old story. You know, his wife, she wanted more, and she wanted more, and she said, let's kill that goose and get everything inside of it, you know. And so she finally convinced her husband to do that. And, of course, they killed the goose, and that was the end of the golden eggs. Eureka Springs right now is our goose. You know, every morning we wake up and we get a golden egg. The tourists are here. The natural resources are here. The people are happy and healthy. But we have this little group of businessmen who are determined to say, more, 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 more.
We queried two stakeholders to comment. One is Hotelier and Main Street Eureka Board Chair Jack Moyer. He declined to be interviewed. James DeVito, however, agreed to talk.
I am very encouraged that there are a number of people running and that the seats are contested, and that is how it should be, that people have a choice to make as to who they want to represent themselves.
DeVito is a longtime downtown restaurant owner, five-term city council member, and fifth-term city advertising and promotion commissioner.
I think it's playing out here in town where some people put the economy above people's health, and I think that's also occurring on a national level. Unfortunately, the people that want the economy above health may not make the connection that until we have a healthy population, we will not have a healthy economy.
DeVito says he's against any expenditure of advertising dollars that promote crowding in Eureka at this juncture, but he does support promoting Eureka as a safe tourist destination. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Northwest Arkansas's healthcare community is launching a new wave of messages to reinforce guidelines for helping to slow the spread of COVID-19 in the region. A new video public service announcement shows community members engaged in behaviors designed to prohibit the spread of the virus. That includes mask wearing, social distancing, and hand washing. The video is in addition to other measures like billboards and social media messages that began in June as part of the Northwest Arkansas Healthcare Community's joint Safe and Strong campaign. The David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History will open its fall 2020 lecture series Thursday night with Feeling Riots, the Emotional Language of Urban Rebellion, presented by Lisa M. Corrigan, Professor of Communication in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This will be the first of four lectures focusing on racism, social justice, and policing hosted by the Pryor Center. Her lecture will be held virtually via Zoom at 6 Thursday evening. Corrigan's most recent book is titled Black Feelings, Race and Effect in the Long 60s. Advance registration for the event is required. You can do so at uark.zoom.us. And how about a Saturday of kittens and beer? That's the theme tomorrow at New Province Brewing Company in Rogers. Best Friends Animal Society in Northwest Arkansas is teaming up with New Province, as well as Mew Cat Rescue and Wilson Zoo, for a drive-up kitten adoption event tomorrow from 10 until noon. Each participant will stay in their car, be masked up, and have a personal kitten concierge for the duration of the event. All kittens are spayed and neutered, are up to date in vaccinations, and have been microchipped. Adoption fees range from $20 to $60. New Province will be selling to-go beer as well. You can find out more about the event at the Facebook page for Purrs and Pints Drive Up Kitten Adoptions. And yes, masks are required at all times for everyone at the event.
When you want to hear important, insightful, and intelligent reporting, you turn to KUAF. When you want to dive into an important issue, you turn to KUAF. And when you want intelligent conversation about a complicated issue, you turn to KUAF. This fall, KUAF is turning to you. We're raising money during the month of September to keep all of the important programs you rely on every day on the air. Our contributing listeners provide more than 75% of our funding. You can be a part of our fall fundraiser and make a difference to your public radio station. Give now at supportkuaf.com.
Photographer Ansel Adams captured images of the Western United States and helped define the 20th century vision of the American landscape. His work is the subject of a new exhibition at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art that opens to the public tomorrow. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended a virtual media preview of the show yesterday, and she brings us this report.
Ansel Adams in Our Time features more than 100 of Adams' photographs, which are displayed alongside the work of 19th century photographers. The show also includes about 80 works by 24 of Adams' contemporary successors, including Cuban-born artist Abelardo Morel, whose work was recently acquired by Crystal Bridges. Alejo Benedetti, associate curator of contemporary art, says including other photographers' work in the exhibit adds context to Adams' photographs.
What's exciting about this is that it gives us the opportunity to sort of look back in time, but also understand how this sort of Ansel Adams legacy continues on through today and how it remains relevant today.
The exhibition was organized by the Museum of Fine Arts Boston and is divided into 7 sections based on the places and themes Adams shot throughout his career.
I've been telling folks that Ansel Adams is the backbone of this exhibition, but it's not just a sort of strict chronological march through his career. We were able to sort of bend the chronology and we're able to understand the fact that he returns to different subjects and to different places multiple times throughout over 5 decades of working. And so we start with a section called Western Beginnings, and it's really focused on Yosemite because this is when Ansel Adams gets his first camera, a Kodak Box Brownie at 14. He goes to Yosemite, and that's the first place he's photographing. But he photographs all throughout his career in Yosemite.
According to the museum, Adams pushed the boundaries of fine art photography by employing abstraction, direct exposure, and innovative printing techniques to create vibrant, detailed, and highly contrasting images. Benedetti says from an early age, Adams was aware of the power of photographs and his ability to market them.
At 17, he joins the Sierra Club and he starts taking folks on these month-long excursions in the High Sierras. And he would take folks on these guided month-long excursions, but then would take photos along the way and then offer them contact prints as sort of mementos of their trip.
In 1928, Adams created a portfolio using photos from these excursions, which Benedetti says was an important turning point for the artist as he really starts his career as a professional photographer. Adams is likely most known for his photographs of national parks, and in the Picturing the National Parks section of this exhibition, these works hang alongside those of contemporary artists.
And of course, if you're a contemporary artist going to the national parks now, there's always going to be at least a little bit of the sort of Ansel Adams shadow that is following you around. What's exciting is that somebody like Catherine Opie, and you can just sort of barely see two of her works on the left here, she is going in and she's trying to figure out how do I assert my voice in there, a feminist voice into the national parks, a space that from a photography perspective is often dominated by someone like Ansel Adams or some of his predecessors.
Head of Interpretation Stace Treat says this section also offers touch-free engagements, including a replica of Adams' first camera, darkroom tools, and an expanded panel reflecting on the racial legacy of the National Park Service.
There's a difficult past that we have that we want to and need to acknowledge about the relationship of people of color to the great outdoor spaces. That's been fraught. So we actually wrote in a panel that goes also in the wall in this space that addresses that. So we did want to acknowledge that, not just mythologize and, you know, present everything as tidy as often has been done in the past.
The part of the exhibition called In the American Southwest focuses on Adams' depiction of the landscape and the indigenous people of the region. Alejo Benedetti, associate curator of contemporary art, says Ansel Adams first went to the Southwest on an assignment and quickly became taken by the landscape, which was so different from what he was accustomed to.
And he became very concerned very quickly with the sort of growing tourist industry that was happening in the American Southwest. and would go to watch these different these different dance performances that would happen put on in his case. He would go to the to watch the Pueblo people and watch different performances that they would do, and he would take photographs of these performances, but very strategically, just barely crop out any sort of sign of tourists that were there watching. Even though he, of course, himself was a tourist watching this performance that was being put on.
Benedetti says what's interesting is even though Adams is incredibly sympathetic to what's happening, he's still a product of his time.
And is in fact continuing a tradition that was well established of these white photographers going out to the American West in an effort to try to supposedly document this sort of dying race, which of course is complete fiction and absolutely false, but it's something that that again is very much part of this conversation and part of something that Ansel Adams was photographing.
Although Adams lived through a different era, his work continues to stand the test of time.
It has been many years since we've had a new Ansel Adams work. All of the work continues to be incredibly relevant. And the conversations are still happening. The conversations continue to shift slightly and nuances of it shift. But this is the sort of hallmark of really powerful artwork, that those conversations continue to happen long after the work is created.
Ansel Adams in Our Time is on view September 19th through January 3rd. Tickets are $12 for the public, and admission is free for members, veterans, and guests 18 and younger. Crystal Bridges is also hosting a photo contest, inviting visitors to post their own nature-related photography on Instagram with the hashtag #ChannelYourInnerAnsel. Entries will be judged by the museum's curators, and the top three photographs will be printed and displayed in the gallery in December. More information about tickets and programming associated with the exhibition is available at crystalbridges.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Arkansas's season-opening soccer match against LSU is tomorrow at 3 in Fayetteville. What few tickets were available to the public are now gone, distributed to players' family members, season ticket holders, and a small number of University of Arkansas students. The match will be shown live on the SEC Network. The 2020 pandemic-altered soccer schedule includes 8 matches for the Razorbacks, all of them against conference opponents. There will be an SEC tournament in Orange Beach, Alabama at the end of the regular season. All 14 SEC teams are invited to that tournament. The University of Arkansas men's and women's cross-country teams will open their seasons tomorrow morning in Baton Rouge at a meet that is called the SEC Preview. Because of the pandemic, there are no home races this fall for the Razorbacks. And another autumn sports season, volleyball, will begin for the Arkansas Razorbacks in just under a month. The Razorbacks start an 8-match fall season at Mississippi State on Saturday, October 17th. And the Summer Pump Track Classic, set for tomorrow at the Runway Bike Park in Springdale, is canceled. The children's bicycling competition held on the campus of the Jones Center was canceled due to lower-than-hoped-for registration for an event that's already been rescheduled. The event is typically held in June or July when area youth who want to participate are out of school for the summer, but was postponed until this month to ensure it would be held with all the safety and social distancing protocols in place.
Support for KUAF comes from Westwood Gardens, offering mini and large pumpkins, ornamental squash, and straw bales, as well as pansies for fall decorating. Westwoodgardens.com for more information or to place a pickup order.
It is the final Friday of summer, and with me on the phone is a fan of that fact, I think, Becca Martin Brown, who is the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You like autumn, don't you, Becca?
I love autumn, but here's what I love more.
All right.
Gonzaga plays its first basketball game the day before my birthday.
Which is?
My birthday's the 26th, the day of November. The game is the 25th.
Well, and before November 25th, there are things to do, right?
There are. And, you know, I think we're kind of getting the hang of this, that we've got some live events if you're up for them. We've got some online events if you're still more comfortable at home. And this week, we've got some old school virtual reality.
Hmm.
First of all, live in the real world, Sunday at 6:30, there's a gospel show at the Walton Arts Center. a real show live in person.
That you can go to and sit, admittedly far from the person around you, but you can go and see in person.
Exactly. It's called The Gospel Truth, An Evening with the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. And Reggie James of Music Moves has put together a group of singers who are going to come in and do African-American spirituals and gospel, because it's gospel month, apparently. Mm-hmm. Who knew? And the APO is coming to play, and it'll be a small orchestra, but it'll be everything you need. And a lot of it, I think, will be really inspiring at this particular time in the world.
And is this in Baum, which normally holds about 1,200 people,
yeah,
but it's going to be fewer than like 200 or so?
200.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be 200. And it's raising money for PPE for area schools. So it's not a cheap ticket. It's a $100 ticket.
Mm.
But it's going for a good cause. And you can find out more at the WaltonArtCenter.org or 443-5600. Never one to just give you the expensive ticket. Here's a free ticket.
Okay.
The Rogers Historical Museum opens for visitors at 10 o'clock on Thursday. They're not going to open their interactive areas, such as the Children's Gallery and Grandma's Attic. But they've added new things to the other galleries. They've added a barn to the Natural State Exhibit. They've expanded the Montanay Exhibit, which we're all fascinated by in Northwest Arkansas.
Yep.
They're going to do a maximum of 18 visitors at a time.
Okay, that's fair.
In that giant building, so that's plenty
right.
of room. In the meantime, they've got all these things going on online, including their at-home kids craft corner, and they're going to do that on October 3rd with a special Halloween edition where you design a COVID-friendly Halloween mask, and then you can show off your Halloween mask in the Rogers Virtual Halloween Parade on the 30th.
And I'm guessing COVID proper means that your nose and your mouth are covered.
One would assume.
Yes.
I still want an Italian doctor's mask, but I haven't gotten around to that yet.
Oh, you mean one of those, like from the plague years? And
yeah, with the giant nose.
Mm, I find those
disturbing.
You know
what they did with those?
Didn't they put spices in them, the things that they thought would keep them safe from the plague?
Exactly what they did. They put herbs in the nose. Okay, we've digressed.
Yes.
The Rogers Historical Museum is also doing their Ghost Walk guided tour, which they love,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing it by Zoom.
Okay.
So it's happening on October 28th at 7, and you sign up. Registration will be at Eventbrite starting the 1st of October. All these things are happening both live and in person. Now, let me tell you the hours at the museum will be restricted for physical visits.
Okay.
It's 10 to 11 a.m. and 1 to 2 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, which gives them cleaning time in between.
Absolutely.
And then 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, and just those 3 days right now.
Good way to start, though, right? Just start slow.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Something. And if you're up for 175th birthday celebration,
and who
no,
isn't?
It's not mine. Cosmic Cavern is celebrating 175 years over in Berryville.
And I guess that would mean 175 years that it's been Cosmic Cavern, because the structure itself is probably a few years older than that.
Yeah, a few. No, actually, it was discovered on September 4th, 1845.
Wow.
Yeah. A guy named John Moore and his sons were searching for lead to mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the cave, and they found an underground lake, and people started coming to Moore's Cave. And then they started coming to Moore's Cave to mine onyx at the cave entrance.
Hmm.
And it's been a Tudor cave since before 1980. They tell me, the owner, Randy Langover, called it an old lady cave.
Meaning?
Which presumably means I could go tour it.
That's my kind of cave.
He says there are 60 steps down and about 30 back up, but the rest is bridges and ramps. And then those wild tours, which are completely separate and are mountain climbing inside a cave.
Let me ask you about the old lady cave part. Is it dark and underground?
Yes.
It's not old lady enough for me.
I love caves.
Yeah, I do.
Caves are fascinating.
I love that caves exist, and I love that other people go in them, but I see no reason for me to go into them.
My great dream as a child growing up in Southeast Kansas was to be a cave guide at Silver Dollar City.
My great dream now is to not have my obituary say I died in a cave. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, Cosmic Cavern is open daily until Thanksgiving, 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. They're also open the week of Christmas. Tickets start at $8.50. You can find out more at cosmiccavern.com. Now, here's the old school virtual reality.
Please.
It's a book.
Oh!
You like books. Books are safe,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
It's a book edited by Brian Walter, who's one of my favorite people. And you know who he's editing the work of.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Donald Harrington.
My favorite author.
This is so cool because he's done a bunch of writing and filmmaking about Donald Harrington. But in the course of snooping around in his papers, he found unpublished stories. And then there's an appendix to the book that if you're a Donald Harrington fan, you'll just squee. Because it's got a bunch of letters between Donald Harrington and his editors, some of them talking about his contemporaries as novelists and what he thought of them.
It's available now?
Yeah.
Okay, I know what I'm doing this
afternoon. UAPress.com.
All right.
And Brian's going to do a pair of online events this fall talking about it. He's going to do a talk for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on November 19th and a 90-minute short course on December 1st for them called Staying More, New Work by Donald Harrington.
Exciting stuff.
Find out more about those at olli.uark.edu. Now, here's the short version of some things happening.
Okay.
It's Super Saturday tomorrow at the Fayetteville Public Library, but it's online at Facebook at 10 o'clock with Tommy Terrific's Wacky Magic. Makerspace at your place on the Rogers Public Library's Facebook page at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Shiloh Museum's hosting its Saturday series for families at 10:30 tomorrow on old-time toys and games. Again, this happens on their Facebook page. And Rogers Historical Museum is hosting an at-home kids craft corner at 2 p.m. on influential women to go with the current exhibit. Happens on their Facebook page. And then on Sunday, you can go to Crystal Bridges, and they've taken their Saturday and Sunday art afternoons and moved them outdoors next to the giant spider.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So from 1 to 4, you can go pick up art supplies for a particular thing, and then you can wander off onto the grounds and do your project.
That is a full list, Becca.
No kidding.
All right.
And we should be doing bikes and slalom. This is like, you know, a slow weekend.
Yeah, add it to the, yeah, right. Well, stay safe, and you and I will talk again next Friday. How's that?
What a lovely idea.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
That's John Coltrane's recording of Blue World from the motion picture. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday. We'll hear more from Coltrane, as well as music from Ned Otter, Herlin Riley, Lisa Hilton, Freddie Cole, and much more. Tune in to Shades of Jazz right here on KUAF 91.3 FM, listener-supported National Public Radio.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Garfield. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. If you'd like to help keep your community's local schools supplied with personal protection equipment, you can make a donation to our Giving Tree right here at the Carver Center for Public Radio at 9 South School in Fayetteville, or you can host a remote drop-off location that could benefit the schools closest to you. Right now, we have three remote sites: Arkansas Arts and Fashion Forum in Springdale, Fossil Cove Brewing Company in Fayetteville, and Bike Rack Brewing Company in Springdale. For the full list and addresses, you can go to KUAF.com. And if you'd like to host a remote drop-off location for the KUAF Giving Tree Schools in Session PPE Drive, you can send an email to Pete Hartman. That email address is pete@kuaf.com. Mid-morning today, Fossil Cove from Fayetteville brought by a big supply of PPE, including face shields and masks. We thank them for that. And you can always help us out by making your donation here at 9 South School in downtown Fayetteville. Contributors to this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large included Jacqueline Froelich and Antoinette Grajeda. Timothy Dennis produced our show today. Our thanks to Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics for his help today. And our thanks to Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can read more about what Michael and I talked about at talkbusiness.net. You can see a full rundown of weekend activities in the What's Up section in the Sunday edition of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Our theme is titled First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl performs live most every weekday afternoon at 4 o'clock on his Facebook and Instagram feeds. Our mid-show songs come to us from the good folks at the Fayetteville Roots Festival. We'll be back with you Sunday morning at 9 for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large, and we'll begin a brand new week of daily Ozarks at Large Monday at noon. Also Monday on KUAF, the on-air portion of our September fundraiser begins. You can make a contribution right now if you'd like, because the entire month of September is fundraising month for 91.3 KUAF. We're raising $140,000 throughout the month to make sure we can bring you Ozarks at Large, Science Friday, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, all the programs you listen to on KUAF. You can make your contribution in the amount that is best for you by going to supportkuaf.com. Also there, information about how you could become a sustaining member and give a little bit every month. Supportkuaf.com. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us this Friday. We'll talk to you again soon. Please take care of yourself.